Welcome back to Fishnets and Philosophy. This is your host, Mix Bell Morrigan, and once again, we are embarking on a journey into the exploration of the question, why horror? Where each week, myself and a different guest just try and unpack this question. So before we jump into the discussion, I am joined by Nicole, and who's also connected with the Bodies of Horror. So yeah, if you could just kind of say what it is that you do and just kind of your connection to horror.
Yeah, of course. So my name is Nicole, and I host a podcast called Bodies of Horror, and it is on the Anatomy of the Scream feed, and it is a bi-weekly podcast where I look at horror films through a lens of disability.
Brilliant. Oh, look, that sounds so interesting, and yeah, like there needs to be more of stuff like that, I 100% believe. So that sounds really cool. So thanks for coming on. I already can tell that there will just be interesting perspectives for each of these questions I have. I think I'm kind of like doing something similar, just from a very queer philosophical lens rather than a disability mm-hmm. lens. And the more perspectives on horror, the better is always what I think. But yeah, for these discussions, I always like to kick it off with this first question. Purely because I think every horror fan has their own unique answer, and I just like hearing about the different films. So the first question is, what's the first horror film that you remember watching, and then spinning from that, because sometimes these answers can be different, what's the horror film that made you a fan of horror?
Wow, yeah, that's always a great place to start. To be perfectly honest, it's a little hazy in terms of what the first horror film is that I watched. I have a really distinct memory of watching The Exorcist when I was really, really young. It was on cable or something, and I happened to come across it and just kind of became entranced by the whole thing. So I think that's really one of my, I think, earliest, I guess, memories.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say in terms of a film that really made me a horror fan, I mean, again, it's The Exorcist. How can that be part of it? But probably Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm.
Because I think it was a film where I was kind of seeing myself in a way, and I wanted more of that, and so I think that kind of kicked all of that off.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And if you wouldn't mind kind of expanding on that, in which way did you kind of see some form of like representation on screen? Because I always like love those type of stories when someone goes, oh, that's me on screen. So I want to know, like, how was it that you saw yourself represented on screen?
Well, I have an older sister.
Mm.
And I think being born with a disability, a lot of us have an experience where our siblings kind of become part of our care team in a lot of ways. And so I could see bits of our relationship in the Sally and Franklin relationship.
Okay.
Not always as nice, because I think that Sally and Franklin have such a really kind and beautiful dynamic, but I could see little flickers of that, and I think frustration. Franklin is a very frustrated character because no one really kind of understands his experience. And I think I saw it at an age where I was definitely experiencing that, where I couldn't explain to people how certain things were making me feel, and I could sense that from Franklin.
Oh, interesting. That's really interesting. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, no, I'm just like, it's something similar that I've like kind of said on a few of my other episodes, that like I've realized that one of the reasons that body horror as a type of horror genre is something that just always gets under my skin so much is because of the fact that, I realized that only now, after like I've been out as genderqueer non-binary for 2 years now, before then my body was the location of horror for me, but I never really had the words to express that. And it's only now in reflection that I understand it. And I think that's why body horror as a genre still gets me, because it's like the remembrance of that in a different way. So no, thank you for saying that, that you recognize the frustration of something that you didn't know how to express, because I can relate to that from a different perspective. And
Yeah.
that's really interesting. So thank you for that. So yeah, so spinning from that, I want to know actually, just when it comes to watching horror films, like what are your favorite subgenres, but more particularly, like why are they your favorites? Like, as in what is it you turn to these specific subgenres for?
Well, it's that's a great question to ask because body horror is really one of my favorite subgenres because it is, I think, so key, especially for those of us that have weird relationships with our bodies. And I think especially filmmakers like Cronenberg, why he's such a pillar in horror, but particularly of body horror, is because he creates these narratives that really explore these difficult relationships that we have with our bodies and the difficult relationships that other people have with their bodies when they don't fit in a very specific kind of way. They don't look like everyone else's body. They don't work the way that other people's bodies work. And so, yeah, body horror, I think, is really that subgenre that I have such a visceral experience with whenever I delve in, for sure.
100%. And yeah, I like what you kind of said, that it's like people who have a weird or disconnected relationship with our bodies in a way tend to turn to the genre that kind of actually expounds on that. It's like really, in like, it's something that I just find so fascinating about horror fans, that we actually, like, instead of like, it's not really finding escapism in horror, it's more kind of like actually trying to see yourself, your own horror is represented, so you can process it. Like, yeah, horror fans just fascinate me so much. Like, I just love our fucked up minds. Like, it's just like, that's why I'm doing this podcast, talking to so many different people, because I just want to figure out like what makes you tick, why horror. It's like so interesting to me. But actually, kind of spinning off from that, and it's not actually one of the questions that I prepared, but it's something that I'm always like uniquely kind of interested in. And as someone who, like, looks at horror through the lens of a disability, I think your perspective on this would be really interesting. But when you're talking about, like, how Cronenberg focuses on bodies that might not necessarily look quote unquote normal and stuff like that, because unfortunately, when it comes to our society, everything's constricted in a binary way, that it's either you're acceptable or you're not. But something that I notice a lot in horror, less so now, more horror in the older days, but it still happens, is the sense that villains are often disfigured in a way, or their bodies are the locale of something grotesque, as in that's why we're supposed to be afraid of them. So I want to know, as someone who does approach horror through the lens of disability, like what you think about that type of representation on screen.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think, something that especially those of us that look through that kind of see these films through a lens of any kind of representation, I think that this is always a question we come back to, right? When we have these villainous, evil characters that are representative of us in some way, but we're not supposed to care for them, we're not supposed to root for them. I I guess I kind of fall in a category of, I like myself a good disabled villain. I think they're, really interesting. I think if they're done in a way that, lets them have something else besides just a disability, I think it can be a really kind of worthwhile thing to explore. I think where it becomes tricky, or I think something that just doesn't necessarily click for me is when it just is the disability that kind of is the fuel, without any real kind of thought or reasoning behind it. I think that's the issue. I think, we're all complex people. We don't fall in the categories of good and bad. Bad people can do good things. Good people can do bad things. We're all just kind of living in a state of gray. And I think that, when you say, well, a person that fits within this category shouldn't be viewed this way, it becomes really constrictive and it doesn't allow for, some textured and layered representation versus, give me a disabled villain. Let, you know, we can have fun with that, but actually put some thought into
Yes, no, I 100% love that you're saying that, and I think like I'm picking up a lot on what you're saying as well, because I think there's like definitely an overlap with, the intersection of like say queerness as well, in the sense that, a lot of times like queer people attach to the villains because throughout the history of horror, that's the only representation we got. Like, we weren't allowed to be the hero, it was only the villain, and if anything, it was subtextual anyway. So I think I can definitely see that. I like your point about maybe it comes down to, I guess, the intent, or hopefully there's more going on than just this on the surface. Like, when it comes to like thinking of like queer horror, one of my favorite kind of go-to examples is the film that was out recently, and I want to make a point, I can't remember the name of it, but I'll come back to it. But essentially, it's the film where basically two characters are in a queer lesbian relationship, but that's not the cr plot of the film. It just happens to be the case. And I think that's always more interesting when there's a rich tapestry of a fleshed out character. So whether it's a queer person, a disabled person, a black person, another indigenous person, that's not the reason for the story. It just happens to be there. And I think that makes it more interesting. But picking off on something that you said there about that we exist in this state of gray, which I just love that as a quote. Like, that's just brilliant. Like, that needs to be on like t-shirts. But I want to know, when it comes to like watching horror films for you, like, would there be like clear kind of lines, delineations on one side, this is horror, on another side it isn't, or is it more a state of gray, fluid flux for you?
Well, I definitely think it's fluid, because fear is supposed to be personal. It's supposed to speak to the things that get under our skin. It's why, you and I can be watching the same movie or talking about the same movie, and you can be, coming from a place of, this was the scariest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, and I'm horrified, and I'm not going to be able to sleep for 4 days. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go make a sandwich and, chill. Yeah, horror is very personal. And I think, there's always this joke of people that will, we see it in Twitter all the time. Someone will be like, this is my favorite horror film, and it will be a rom-com or something. It's about the things that speak to us and the things that kind of scare us, either things that we can share as a large group or things that are kind of personal and we maybe don't want to talk about. So, if a film that I mentioned when talking to someone recently as being a really good horror film, is a film that I think came out in, I want to say maybe the early 90s, or late 80s, called The Rapture with Mimi Rogers, and it's about the rapture. And I grew up with a parent that was very fundamental Christian. And so from a very early age, we were being taught about, the rapture and how, one day you can wake up and all the people that you love and you care for and the people that care for you, because I was a really young child at the time, you're just going to be gone and you're going to live in hell, essentially. And it's also saying that you're a good person or a bad person. And I had to go into therapy
Yeah, that's a
because,
lot to sit with.
yeah, I couldn't. When I would go back to my mom, I couldn't go to slumber parties. I would break down when I would go to school because I couldn't leave her. Because I'm like, I won't survive without my mom. And if my mom can be taken from me at any time, because she's a good person and I'm a bad person, I don't want that. And so, yeah, it was like that was horrifying to me. I've never had a film that has, I think, hit me in
In
that
that
way,
way.
but it's not a horror film.
Yeah, no, that's so that there's so much richness there. Like, thank you for sharing that. But yeah, like, and I think that's really what it is. It is so subjective that we are bringing our own life experiences and our own internal sense of self to every film that we're engaging with. Like, that's just it at the end of the day. In a more that's like how you mentioned that someone will go, oh, this is my favorite horror film, but it's a rom-com. I always think about the fact that that tends to be like most rom-coms now are in a way horror films to me, because I'm a polyamorous non-monogamous person, and most rom-coms revolve around drama about love triangles, and I'm just like, this isn't a problem. And they're almost unwatchable now because they are essentially little horror films. And they just don't make sense to me. But in a more serious note, it is the fact that we are bringing our own subjective experiences. So I want to know what you think about this, because it's something that is always like fascinating to me when it comes to engaging with horror and just, I guess, art and media in general. But do you think like the kind of academic literary concept of the death of the author can apply to horror films? Like, do you like, for me, I'm always like, I never know where I lie, because I'm always like, well, no, a filmmaker clearly has an intent of what they want to do with their film. But then I can't also like, but then someone's reading of it is also correct. Like, I never know where to lie with it. So what do you think? Do you think that one is like objectively the correct one, or that they exist in tandem?
I think they exist in tandem because I can write something, I can make a movie, I can do anything, and I could be wanting to say something. I can have a very specific message that I want to get out there. And maybe a viewer will get that. Maybe a viewer will say, yeah, I understand what, the overall idea is here. But I'm also getting this. So maybe it was something that, through their own life experiences, who they are, the whole shebang, maybe they are getting something that maybe I didn't intend. And maybe, someone could watch a film and be like, I have no idea what they're saying, and this was a waste of time. And that's, you know what? That's valid too. So I think I do think that it's important that when you sit down to create something, that there is an intent, that there is something that you're wanting to say. And that can be a lot of different things. But I do think that you have to have some direction. What people kind of read that direction to be, I think can vary. But if you're like, I'm giving you a map of the world, the globe. And you can kind of point the direction that you want to go, but I'm saying, this is a bit of my journey.
100%. Yeah, I think ultimately that's like when I always have that like discussion in my head, that's where I tend to kind of come back to is that, but they kind of have to exist at the same time because like in general, when it comes to like philosophy, which I'm a graduate of, like I've never understood that, oh, philosophy is like, the pursuit of what is the objective truth, because I've always been like, well, there can't be, because everyone has their own subjective experiences. And like I'd always like annoy my lecturers because like they'd be like, trying to like unpack something, and I'd just be like the stubborn, like, no, that's just stupid. Everyone has their own subjective experiences. Like there can't be an objective reality. Blah. But they're all, yeah, it's that's a different philosophical debate for a different day. But I think yes, when it comes to engaging with films, that everyone's kind of ex like the intent and someone's reading can exist in tandem. But similarly, I also do think that sometimes people can read a film wrong, like, as in, like, yes, their opinion and their reading can exist and it's a valid one to have, but it could also be like a misreading, because I do think that this is something I've noticed more and more, and I don't know if it's just like an online Twitter thing or if it's actually out in the world, but I think there is like a lack of media literacy and critical analysis skills when people are engaging with films and with art. And I see this as well when someone will say, and this is linking back to a point you made earlier, but someone will say, this horror film wasn't a good horror film because it did not scare me. And I want to know what you think about that. Do you think a horror film has to be scary to be considered a good film or an effective film?
I mean, scary is subjective.
Yeah.
So I think that how that plays out can vary quite a bit. Scary can be a jump scare. Scary can be something that unsettles you, emotionally, mentally, maybe even days later, you'll think about the film and be like, ooh, I don't, that that's it. Oh, I didn't like that. I don't think that a horror film necessarily has to scare you because I think that that can look a lot of different ways. I think that, a horror film, you kind of have to kind of come in with your own expectations of what you want it to do. And I think that's why horror is so interesting and diverse with so many subgenres and styles because of that. People kind of get their kicks in all kinds of ways, and horror is hip to that in a way no other genre is. And it's like, oh, so maybe jump scares don't do it for you, but you really like psychological shit. Here you go. We've got a whole thing for you over here. Or, oh, this gets under your skin. Here's 60 films that deal explicitly with this. So yeah, I think that, maybe a horror film can, can kind of come at you either way, and I think it's effective.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I like how your that point you made about horror as a genre is so interesting, because it works in so many different ways. Whereas like even like, when it comes to certain subgenres, like I love how the subgenres will always try and evolve or subvert itself while also honoring the traditions of where it comes from. Like slashers, for example, like a slasher will always acknowledge we exist because of the history of slashers, but we're also going to try and do something different with the tropes that exist. Whereas like with rom-coms, again, for an example, you can't really do much. There's no subverting of a rom-com. Like at most, it's kind of like we're doing the same rom-com story, but now it's going to be queer characters. But it's the same beats and it's the same story that it would be if it was straight characters. But that's not a subversion, it's just a different interpretation. Whereas like with horror, it's like, no, we're going to subvert things and we're going to play with things and we'll make it more interesting and fresh. So yeah, horror is the most interesting and compelling genre, which is why I never understand the type of horror fan that does exist, which says, the like stamp their foot on the ground and kind of say there's no good horror movies anymore. And I want to know what you think. Like, where do you think that attitude type kind of stems from?
All right. So I have to get real with this.
Get real as you need to.
I don't understand. It confuses me because I can understand it from a commentary on mainstream horror, right? So these, of the, let's say, 50 horror films that have been in theaters for X amount of time, 47 were remakes. Okay, so if you want to make a comment about that, I understand. I understand where that may be coming from. I think there's a really nuanced and interesting way to kind of have that conversation. But A, I think you have to steer away from talking about a genre as a monolith. I think that, yeah, I think horror does kind of these really interesting subversions and all kinds of different things in a way that no other genre does. But every genre kind of has its own thing. Like, it's able to have some diversity and variance across the board. So I just want to I don't know. I'm like, do you not watch movies? Do you need suggestions? Do you like, where are you going? Especially now, because as much as everyone likes to hate on streaming services, streaming has made, I think, accessibility to films just so much more robust and amazing. And so, if someone says, well, yeah, last year nothing really came out. Oh, really? Well, there were, 70 new films that dropped on here. So what, is there a specific kind of film that you want to watch that, came out? Because I can probably point you in that direction if you give me a little intel. So I don't know. I, again, I think, sure, we can. If you want to bemoan a trend in mainstream horror, I understand that as a jumping off point. Again, I think also coming back to it and saying you're only speaking about a very small sliver of the offerings. And there's a lot more out there if you just want to do a little bit of digging, and that digging is now a lot easier.
Exactly. And I think that's what it is. Like you said, these people aren't doing the digging, or they're just not educating themselves. Like, as in, it's like, I think it stems from this only paying attention to studio tentpole horror and not independent horror and not like, the stuff that's appearing on Shudder or Arrow Player and all these other various platforms. They're just focusing solely on what the big studios are releasing. And yeah, I think they're two different conversations. Like, even when it comes to the big studio releases that are doing remakes or that are building connected universes and stuff like that, like specifically, let's say focus on remakes, I'll never understand the argument of like, oh, they shouldn't remake X film, because I'm just like, why not? Like, the original film isn't going anywhere. It's still there. You can still enjoy it. You don't have to engage with the new version if you don't want it to be touched. But this new one existing doesn't sully the other film. And so, like, yeah, it's something that I've never understood. And like, I'm always like, no, like, let's see another person's interpretation of a character. Like, let's see if it can be enrich it. That's always exciting to me, because I'm always like, the more horror, the better, whether it's a reimagining of something that's already existing or it's a new voice that's making horror and stuff like that. It's all good in my eyes. I'm very, maybe it's just because I am so polyamorous and non-monogamous. I'm just like, give it all to me. I don't want to choose.
But no, I agree with that, and I think that's kind of my take as well. I'm an unabashed lover of a lot of remakes because I think they're interesting, they're fun, and to your point, exactly, the original film still exists and I can still watch it and it's still good and no one was hurt. And also, instead of going into a movie being like, this is going to upset me, you could just not watch that movie and move on. Find a movie that you think you're really gonna like. I think there's this idea that you have to see everything, and if something doesn't appeal to you, you can make a choice to not watch it and then feel fine with that. So again, it's there. I think there are two different conversations that someone is trying to have when they make that statement. And I think you just have to kind of poke and prod and be like, all right, well, what are you actually,
Yeah, where are you coming from, buddy?
Yeah, exactly. And maybe there's something really interesting that we can have a good conversation on, but to make kind of the sweeping thing of, there's no good horror out right now. Really? Because I think there's actually quite a bit, and let's talk about it. Like, what are you seeing that you don't like? And let me talk to you about what I'm seeing that I really do like. And maybe we can be friends on that level. And I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, like I'm kind of just going back to those, like, it reimaginings or remakes and stuff like that. Like, as a slight kind of like a comparison I always like to make in my head is that, when they're doing like, even if it's a big studio, like which it usually is because they're the ones that own the properties, but when they're doing like a remake or a reimagining of like a classic horror film, it's being made by horror fans. Like people who are directing horror films or writing the stories are fans of horror, are fans of the genre. So they are coming at it with the intent of like wanting to make something good. Whereas like, that's different to, big conglomerates like Disney doing a live action remake of one of their animated films. That's just like a cash grab versus a reimagining of a horror film is being made by horror fans. Like that's always the comparison I like to make, and I'm just like, I just wish people were approaching things with more positivity. But like your point as well, if they know or if they have this like ardent belief that this remake shouldn't exist, you don't have to engage with it. Like and the thing as well, I like your point of it's this mentality of you have to see everything. It's kind of like, well, if everyone who didn't like the fact that remakes existed didn't engage with the remakes that come out, the studios would probably be like, maybe we should stop doing it because they're not as popular.
Exactly. And I mean, I think, I don't know. I understand seeing a movie and being like, oh, that didn't work for me. And talking about it, I think that's completely valid and can be interesting. I think when you go and you just make these really big, sweeping, comments of this, all remakes are terrible, all horror films made after, whatever year you pick out of a hat are bad. Like, those are arguments that really don't have a ton of merit because it's really not saying anything. It just makes you sound uninformed and it makes you sound like you're not actually wanting to watch anything. That you just want to have these same movies on a loop and kind of live in
Live in
that
that
state.
nostalgia bubble.
Yeah. And then, hey, if that's for you, then do it. And I'm not gonna, like,
Yeah, exactly.
cool.
Just don't shit on other people's enjoyment of things.
Yeah.
And I like what you said about, you know, I do think, like, and again, I think it's always like there's obviously, you know, discussions in communities that are very much online, and then there's how people engage with films offline. And I do think there can be differences, but like I've seen it in the real world as well that, you know, someone will go, oh, I love this movie, like I had a really good time with it. And then there will always be someone who will go, oh, no, that movie's shit, and try and like convince you that your enjoyment of it isn't valid. Which, and I never like that approach. But on the flip side, I don't like it when someone who has had a good experience with a film will say to someone, like, so say someone goes, oh, this film didn't work for me, I didn't like it. And then someone who's a fan of it goes, oh, well, maybe you didn't understand it, or will try and turn them onto their side. And I just like, no, just let people have their own opinions. Yes, there can be really interesting discussions with this film worked for me, and here's why. This film didn't work for me, and here's why. And then trying to find where the middle ground can be, that's fun. But just again, like you said, sweeping statements of this film was shit, and you should also agree, is just stupid. Or this film was great, you should also agree. But kind of coming back to kind of sweeping statements and avoiding the nuance of discussion, this is one where I think sometimes there can be sweeping statements that avoids the nuances. But I want to know what you feel about like censorship when it comes to horror films. Like, do you think that there's a line that shouldn't be crossed, or do you think that art is art and everything is permissible? Like, I want to know what you think.
I mean, there are obviously things in film I don't like to see that are upsetting. I think sometimes that's a good thing. That's, you know, by having those things in film, I think it's making a point. I think in general, probably go more with the art is art. And, you know, again, if something, you can choose not to engage with something. If something seems like it's going to be upsetting, to you, you can choose to not, you know, spend an additional 90 minutes with it. Do I think that some films go beyond kind of a certain boundary and become really kind of tasteless and crass? And sometimes, you know, say things that are really harmful, sure. But again, I think a constructive way to maybe look at it is instead of saying, well, these films shouldn't exist, it's what can we say about these films? Why, you know, why are these, you know, what I think this gets back to what we were talking about with like representation. There are films that, you know, I think have absolute atrocious representation of disabled characters. But I don't think that they shouldn't exist. I don't think, you know, I'm not pained because they are there. They give me something to say, oh, well, that's not great. So, hey, I want to talk about it. So how can I take this and make something useful from it?
Exactly. And I love that point, and I think that's a really interesting one. Because yeah, I think like certain films that we as individuals who approach film, like approach, you know, engaging with films, we might go, these type of scenes or these type of depictions make me really uncomfortable, or to go to the type of like representation, this representation was problematic or wasn't accurate. That gives us a launching point to have those discussions as to why. As in, you can kind of, it's like a, it's a measuring stick, it's a yardstick that you can use to kind of say, this is an example of like really shitty representation of disability or of blackness, of queerness, whatever the minority rep being represented is. We can go, this is a really bad example of it and of what you should do. here's how we could do it better. It's a launching point for those discussions. So I think having that like sweeping monolithic stance of these should all just go in the trash avoids that nuance of allowing to have the conversation. Because like, yeah, in an ideal world, there would be no racism, there would be no queer phobia, there would be no ableism and like every other type of shit bigotry, and we wouldn't have to have these bad examples that we talk about. But we're not in an ideal world. So having an ability to have those nuanced discussions and to kind of say how we can be more positive, I think that can only be a strength in the long term. Like, if we look at the history of cinema, the type of queer representation we're mostly getting now in horror has come a long way to where it used to be. So we can actually compare and say, look, this is what it looks like now. And the reason it looks like this is because we were able to have those discussions of how shit it was in the past. And hopefully that will be the case for disability in horror as well, which it seems like it is moving in the right direction too. Like the first film that comes to my mind, now I'm not disabled, so I don't know if my perspective of it was correct, but that movie Run, which was on Netflix, that to me looked like this is an example of like, or at least it's moving in the right direction compared to having a completely able-bodied actor in a wheelchair. But I don't know.
Exactly. And I think that, again, just because I'm someone with a disability, disability isn't a monolith. My experience is my experience with my disability. Someone could have the same diagnosis and their life is going to be completely different. They're going to be reacting to things a lot differently from a different perspective than I am. And we both, come at it from the point of disability, but it's just going to be wildly different. So I could look at something and be like, oh, wow, that's terrible. And I could be like, oh, no, actually, that's kind of my experience. And this is something, I think that when we look at things as, I always want to learn more. And so I never want to be like, well, this is bad. This is bad representation. This is a bad scene. This is a bad film. Because I don't know what I don't know. I want to have a conversation about it and I want to hear other perspectives. I want to, and it could be that a lot of people are like, yeah, that's pretty rough. And then we can talk about, all right, well, why? And what can we do differently? Or I can learn something different and be like, oh, I never looked at it from that perspective. And now I can kind of recontextualize this film, this scene, this representation, this character, whatever the case may be. And that's kind of exciting too. I really like that experience of, being schooled, of being like, hey, actually, I'm looking at it from this perspective and this is my take and could be very different from mine and it could inform something for me.
100% off. Yes, I love everything that you're saying there. It's so good. And I think that actually really kind of neatly kind of goes back to that like kind of discussion we had earlier about the whole kind of like death of the author and everyone's kind of subjective experience. Because again, as you said, I think if we all just approached our engagement with horror films and just art in general with more of an openness and a receptiveness to kind of being like, my reading of it could be colored incorrectly, So trying to like, and again, like, I don't think there's any objectively true reading of a film that there's only one way, every other reading of apart from that is wrong. I don't think that, but I do think that there can be like, not an objectively true, but a more accurate reading, which you can get to from those discussions, from that openness of recontextualizing things. And speaking of recontextualizing things, I want to know what, like, you think about this, because I know that we said earlier about, sometimes you can just make that decision of going, you know what, this film didn't work for me, I'm not going to engage with it, or I'll choose not to engage with it. I think sometimes when it comes, particularly to horror films, because we bring our own subjective experiences to it, that sometimes the first time you watch a film can be like, you know what, that film wasn't good, it didn't work. But then if you revisit it after a couple of years or a couple of months and things have changed and you've changed, you can then end up going, oh no, I'm actually picking up something from this film that I didn't before. And I want to know what you think about that. Like, do you think people should be more open to revisiting films, or should it just be, if it didn't work, it didn't work, and they don't have to revisit?
I mean, I don't, no one should have
Have
to revisit, yeah.
to, yeah.
But I think there have been, especially since I've gotten into really like listening to a ton of different like podcasts on horror, there have been a number of different films where, I haven't watched it since it came out, or maybe I've watched it once or twice and, it didn't work. And so I'll see that a podcast that I really like is doing an episode on it, and I'll listen. And I almost always walk away thinking, wow, so this is going to be the next film that I watch. Because, even if it doesn't change my mind on something or completely like reframe the entire film for me, I'm gonna view things a little bit differently. I've learned some things. I've heard some other perspectives. And so, I've been going back, and listening to, a podcast that does franchises. And I've gone all the way back to listening to their Halloween, franchise because, we're getting ready to have
Halloween
Halloween
ends.
Ends.
Will it end? Who knows?
Well, yeah, it's not gonna end.
No.
It never ended. So, but I've gone back and I've started listening to their podcast, and I have gotten now, I think, to the Rob Zombie H2. And I really like it. I think it's an interesting film. I like that it veers a little, differently from the franchise prior. In the other timelines. But in listening, they brought up some really fascinating points about why the film didn't work for them, saying, I understand what, Zombie was going for with this character or with this idea. It just didn't gel for me because of this. So I can now watch it and not be, it doesn't take away from the fact that I enjoy it. It doesn't take away from the fact that maybe that does work for me, but I can view it a little bit with a different level of critical lens and be like, oh, okay, I can kind of see why they maybe feel that way. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, no, oh, that's like, yeah, it just comes back to this. I just wish there was more openness to the way people engage with horror films. Like, like us people that, like, host podcasts or talk on podcasts, who write reviews of horror, like, we definitely approach horror from a very different perspective to someone who's just a cinema goer. And, like, they just watch the film and then switch off. Like, they don't want to dig deeper, they don't want to bury into it. Like, we're very much, no, we want to dig through those layers, we want to understand it all. And but I think, like, if there was more general openness and to the type of engagement with horror, it just makes it more interesting, because there are so many different perspectives. And I think that's why we are, in general, in a golden age of horror, because we're getting so many different types of voices making horror. And that can only be a good thing. Like, that, it can only be exciting to see where horror can go. But I think, as I kind of like a rounding off kind of closing question, I want to know for yourself, like, what are your, and this is always an oxymoron of a statement, but what are your comfort horror films? Like, if you've had a bad day or a bad week, like what films do you turn to because you just know you're gonna have a good time with them?
Oh wow. There are a number, I think, of comfort horror films just because, if you love horror, there's always been, you've got a whole
It's a
catalog
conveyor belt.
of films that, bring you joy. But I think two that instantly come to mind are Dr. Giggles and Children of the Corn are two of my comfort horror because I saw them as a kid. And I think Children of the Corn, I saw it, I mean, it's about children. And so being a kid watching kind of horror for kids, with kids, I think it just kind of speaks to you in a different way. And, I grew up, it takes place in Nebraska, but I grew up in Iowa, right next door. So it always, I always call myself a child of the corn. So yeah, and Dr. Giggles again was, I think, really important in terms of representation, but it's also the most bananas, ridiculous film. And like, you cannot just not enjoy and have a good time watching it. I, at least for me, like I just love it. It brings me much warmth and joy.
I've never heard of this film. This is a first name. And again, this is why I love this podcast, because like someone will mention a film and I'll be like, oh, I don't know that one. Dr. Giggles from 92, is it?
Yes.
Okay. I'll have to seek that out then. Because especially like one of my favorite ways of engaging with horror and connecting to other horror fans is like kind of asking like, what are your favorite films? And if I haven't seen it, I'll watch it, because then it's a good way of like me getting an insight into that person. Like it's, because if a film is a film that someone returns to because it gives them so much joy, then that's a brilliant way of getting to know a person, is kind of going, oh, what is it that gives them joy, and watching it and then going, oh, I can see this. This makes sense. And yeah, it's a great way of connecting to people. And I think that's something that's for film fans in general, not just horror, but particularly when you are a horror fan, you go, oh, this specific horror film works for this horror fan. Okay, I can see why. I can get that.
Well, and I think it also just speaks to, I think, the richness of the genre. That, a favorite horror film, it's really speaking to, I think, so many different things. It's talking about what's your favorite subgenre, who's your favorite directors, what, and then you're really starting to extract what makes someone tick and what really has, I think, fueled for them a love of the genre. But to your point, which I think is really important, movies in general.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as a just when you mentioned there, just like, someone's favorite horror film just is an expression of the richness of the genre. I just want to know, like, what is your, as a last question, what are your feelings for the future of horror? Like, are you hopeful? Do you think it's going to just continually moving in a more progressive and diverse direction? Like, what do you think about the future for horror?
Yeah, I think the future of horror is good. Horror, I think, is unique in that it's also reflective of society and culture in really profound ways, which is why you see so many people now speaking about horror and writing, these amazing thought-provoking pieces and having podcasts really examining these nuances of perspective with horror. So I think it's good. I think, yeah, you're just going to continue to see a richness of characters, of lived experiences. I think, again, it's also going to be, reflecting the horrors that we're experiencing as a world, so I think that there's never Horror is always going to be in business, and so yeah, I think it's great. And yeah, we're also seeing not just I think more diverse stories, more I think interesting stories being told from that. I think just in general, I think it's really exciting to see the people behind the cameras, the people who are writing the stories being reflective of that too, we have disabled writers and filmmakers now putting films out there about, disability, their experiences, and it's amazing to see. And so I think we're just creating more space for that.
100%. And what a nice resounding hopeful note to close out the discussion on. Like, yes, I'm very much there is a strong level of excitement that I focus on. So yeah, before like thank you so much for coming on. It's been really enjoyable and we've had such a cool discussion. Before I let you go, where can people find you and support your work?
Yeah, so like I mentioned before, I host the Bodies of Horror podcast. So you can find it wherever you find your podcast. And it's on the Anatomy of a Scream feed. So, and it's bi-weekly. And then you can find me on Twitter at Bodies of Horror.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And to my listeners, keep your eyes and ears peeled for future drops in my Why Horror series.